This is the Dave Glover Show with Dave, Rachel, and Kevin. Sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 306. If you didn't hear the top of the show, Hancock and Kelly are coming in to relieve us at 4 p.m. because we are heading over to Godfrey. Andrew's mom passed away after a very brief hospitalization and illness, and she passed away on Friday. So we're going to the wake and the funeral, and we'll hopefully all be back, including Andrew, tomorrow. Chip Lieben has been keeping track of the Trump trial. Today was the second day, our third day of testimony with Michael Cohen. This was when Blanche was going to be cross-examining him. Chet, all I can do is read the CNN, what's going on, but I've been keeping track through the show a little bit. And just from what I'm reading, I haven't cross-examined or presented or defended clients as much as you, but I've done my fair share. And it looks like he's holding his own.
I think he is. And you know, with all of Cohen's baggage, I don't think you really have to be a skilled cross-examiner to go after him. But the areas that they're going to look to get him with are, you know, for example, his vitriol toward Trump. I mean, he very much dislikes Trump, wants him in jail. The question of, well, you know, you lied and you admitted to lying, and so you take the oath of office today. But, you know, how do we know that you're not lying today? You know, all those sorts of things. For example, the transcript, I think is going to be an area that they're going to cover. You know, you tape recorded Trump without his knowledge. You did it behind his back. You know, is that something that you ordinarily do? Why would you possibly do that? So I think and prior to the time that the cross started, Cohen did a mea culpa. He, you know, admitted to being disbarred. He admitted to all the lies. He talked about the pleas of guilty that he took to the various tax cases, the false statement cases, all those sorts of things. But he also equivocated with some of that, kind of saying, well, you know what? Yeah, I pled guilty, but, you know, I kind of was forced to do it. And they threatened to, if I didn't do it, they were going to file an 80-count indictment and include my wife as a defendant. So I was kind of made to do it in that sense. So, I kind of really wasn't guilty. You know, it's like I've had clients tell me, witnesses and clients say, well, you know, I pled guilty to that crime once upon a time, but I just want you to understand that I'm not a criminal. And so you'll see that in the cross-examination coming up, all of that. And so when Todd Blanche, who actually was a former prosecutor, and usually former prosecutors don't have a lot of experience cross-examining people in criminal cases, because a lot of the criminal cases, the defense doesn't really put on any evidence and uses the state's case in order to make their reasonable doubt. So Blanche started off aggressively, and I guess, you know, that's his style, and that's certainly fine. And I think what he was attempting to do was get under Cohen's skin. But the problem with when he started off maybe a little too aggressively, because in about the 24 minutes of his cross-examination, the beginning of it, there were 8 objections. And so you had a lot of objections that are sustained. You had a lot of sidebar conferences. So that not only interrupted his flow, but it said to the jury, well, you know, what is this guy doing? And so, but when then he finally got down to it, and he started asking Cohen very specific questions, Cohen started equivocating on some of his responses, like, I might have said that, or it sounds like something I would say. So, I mean, here's a guy that is a convicted liar. Here's a guy that engaged in other criminal activity. He testified to that on direct examination. And when he starts equivocating, that doesn't help him, and that doesn't help his credibility. And that's certainly where the defense wants him to go, to equivocate. Well, wait a minute. Are you telling me that you did thus and such and you don't remember that? It was such a monumental event, and you certainly couldn't possibly not remember that. And so that's where they'll continue to go, questioning him, for example, about things he said on TikTok and Twitter and all this stuff. And here's a classic example of what the defense or prosecution will use if Donald Trump ever testifies. And this is why you always tell particularly criminal defendants, stay off of social media. Don't get out there, because anything that you say is going to come back to be used against you. And that's exactly what they were trying to do with Cohen. You know, were you on TikTok? Were you talking about Trump? You know, every time you're on TikTok, you ran. I think he had some kind of a show, and every time he ran the show, he's talking at some level about Donald Trump. So the point of all this, as far as the defense is concerned, what they need to do is they need to make this case about Michael Cohen and about Stormy Daniels. They need to impact their credibility, turn this around, and move the jury's attention away from the whole question about phony business records to conceal other criminal activities. So the way that they get to do that is to foster a real intense dislike for both of these people, suggest at the end of the day, well, they're really lying. Really, this was all Cohen's idea. This was all Daniels trying to make a buck on all this stuff. And really, Donald Trump didn't have anything to do with it.
But
and all they need to do is one juror. That's it. One juror hangs this case.
But that's got to be
a win for
real,
Donald Trump.
That's got to be a real dumb juror. I mean, at this point, any reasonable half-brained person knows that this happened. There's enough evidence that everyone knows he slept with Stormy Daniels. Everyone knows that he was dressed like Hugh Hefner. Everyone knows that this is the truth, okay? And everyone understands the basic deal. It's always driven me crazy as a lawyer that people tend to do what they see on television, and too many lawyers think that they're going to get the Perry Mason moment, or they're going to get the Jack Nicholson "you can't handle the truth" moment from A Few Good Men. And as you well know, after your hundreds of trials, that rarely happens. What should a lawyer actually be doing in cross-examination as opposed to the predictable movie cross-examination? What is it that you try to bring out on a cross-examination?
Well, what I try to bring out are inconsistencies with respect to whatever the witness says that's adverse to my client. And a good cross-examiner is never, ever, ever going to ask a question that he doesn't know the answer to. So whether it's by a deposition that you can use to rebut the testimony of the witness, or some other method why you can refute what the witness is testifying that's adverse to your client. But remember that at the end of the day, all of this comes down to the jury instructions. The court is going to instruct the jury about what the law is as it relates to this case and what the elements are. And those are the elements that the prosecution has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And so you know what those elements are, and you know whether or not the witnesses are testifying consistent with those elements. And so when you do your closing argument, you can certainly use those instructions to say they didn't make this element or didn't make that element for this particular reason or that particular reason. And you then can point to the testimony of the various witnesses, Cohen, Daniels, to say, you know, look, Cohen, Daniels' testimony, that was all fluff. That really had nothing whatsoever to do, for example, with false business records. She had nothing to do with that. That had nothing to do with any intent to further and conceal the commission of other crimes. And so that's where you kind of move it away from the government really didn't prove it, the elements beyond a reasonable doubt. And there's no burden on the defense to offer a single piece of evidence, a single witness. The burden is always on the state to prove that the case beyond a reasonable doubt. And that burden never shifts to the defense. And so in this case, apparently they're going to end with Michael Cohen. I'm not sure that's a really good job for the prosecution, because I don't know how much his nose is going to be bloodied by the cross-examination that's going to go on probably into one more day. So if they end on that, then the jury takes that away and says, well, you know what? You know, we have to rely upon Cohen to a certain extent, and I don't like particularly the way this ended. Plus, if they're going to end with Cohen, I thought they were going to call another witness, and I thought it might be a witness to tie up the campaign finance law violations, because remember, the false business record is only part of it, because there has to be the intent to further the commission of other crimes, which was the campaign finance law or the tax law. I don't know whether or not they've offered anything to show that there were campaign finance law violations or that there were tax law violations. They may have, but I haven't seen it. I haven't heard it. And so without that, it would just seem to me that's a problem. That's going to ultimately be a problem for the prosecution. So we'll see. And that's just another reason why ending with Michael Cohen is risky. And I don't know what the defense is going to present. Apparently, they've got some expert witness who is not available until Monday. So I don't think we're going to be doing anything. But tomorrow, they're not doing anything. I think Cohen's cross will continue into Thursday. And then if it's not completed by Thursday, it will be done.
But we could have a verdict by Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that if the defense isn't going to argue or present any evidence, I think you could have a verdict next week.
Okay, buddy. We will be talking to you tomorrow, I'm sure. Thanks so much.
You bet.
324 DGS. Wheels, what is this craziness with the Miss USA?
Have you guys followed this at all?
No.
I saw that she resigned, but I didn't know over what.
So I didn't follow it at all, and then I saw the story that both Miss USA and Miss Teen USA resigned.
Hmm.
And apparently the Miss USA is Noelia Voigt, and she posted something, I think, on Instagram that was like an explanation. But the first letter of the first 11 sentences spells out, "I am silenced."
Oh, wow.
And it turns out, and then I'm like, okay, I read the story, because I'm like, there's got to be something going on, because she talked about her mental health. And I was thinking, okay, is it just too demanding? Are they asking too much? Is it just more than she thought? And it sounds like it's more than that. And I didn't realize this, but you know, they have to sign an unbreakable NDA.
Wow.
Why do you need to sign an NDA to be Miss USA?
Especially Miss Teen USA.
What are you going to learn?
Well, this is what I'm saying. This is why I don't understand this, and why I'm wondering whether or not there's something more that we don't understand. What could you possibly need to sign an NDA for to be Miss USA?
First of all, how do we still have these?
That was my other topic. That's the other thing. Like, why are we still doing beauty pageants? Like, have we not grown past this yet?
It's crazy.
But can you guys think of any legitimate reason? I mean, Dave, you're a lawyer. Why would you need to sign an NDA to be Miss USA?
You only sign NDAs when you have things to hide. Sometimes it's secrets, like, I don't want anyone to know I'm here. Sign an NDA.
Right, or corporate secret, or whatever. What are you learning?
We're going to show you how to make Coca-Cola, but you have to sign this.
So what are you learning as Miss USA that could be damaging to the product, to the company?
Things they have to hide.
This is my point. Like, that seems like a problem all by itself.
Absolutely.
And apparently a bunch of other winners have kind of like signed on to make this point. Like, hey, I don't remember who the organizing body is, but hey, why don't you guys let her out of her NDA so she can talk about it? And obviously no, that's not happening. But like, that makes me really suspicious right off the hop. Why in the world would you need to be, have it sign an NDA to be that?
Well, it's always seemed like a very cruel business. So I'm sure their methods are less than on the up and up.
Oh, are you trying to say that maybe the values they claim to hold during the ceremony do not maybe match up with behind the scenes?
Maybe they have some things to hide.
That bothers me. I mean, yes, the premise is, okay, we don't need to keep parading pretty ladies in front of everybody to judge which one's the prettiest. Like, we don't need to do that anymore.
So if you put it like that, it's really bad.
I know. It's exactly right.
But it's not about who's the prettiest.
Right.
They just all happen to be
Yeah, they all happen to
gorgeous.
Be beautiful. Right. But then to follow it up with, I mean, to me, why not? How does nobody investigate this? What could you possibly need to keep secret from a beauty pageant? What corporate secrets? What information could damage your business?
Well, look at like when Trump had Miss Universe and he was going back and checking out the...
This is my point.
Yeah.
Like, we should be looking at this as a society more and being like, why are you being required to sign away your ability to even talk about your experience? It should be an open book.
Agreed. I agree, especially for a Miss Teen.
Dive into all things Cardinals on Cardinals Conversations, your go-to location for exclusive content from KMOX. Catch it on the Odyssey app or your favorite podcast platform. Stay connected with your team. Cardinals Conversations, where the Redbird talk never stops.
DGS, our buddies Hancock and Kelly are kind enough that they're going to take over in the next segment and allow Wheels and Rach and I to go over to Andrew's mom's funeral. So I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Very kind of you.
Happy to be here.
Explain to me what's going on in Jeff City. My gut is that it's a power grab by the right wing to fight abortion rights, but it's basically taking away the vote of the people. Since when do Republicans take away the vote of the people?
Go ahead, Johnny.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah, well, the issue is, and I have some sympathy for the issue, and the issue is, should there be a higher standard to amend the Constitution than simply a 50% plus one vote of the people? A couple of years ago, we put the legalized marijuana in the state constitution. It now comprises 20% of the words in the state constitution. So I do have some sympathy that the threshold to amend a constitution ought to be higher. It is in the United States. So you need 2/3 of the House, 2/3 of the Senate, and 3/4 of the states to ratify it in order to amend the U.S. Constitution. So, but it's gotten embroiled over the abortion issue, which is likely to be on the November ballot. And there's been, I think, a general concern over the years that a lot of policies that Republicans have rejected in the legislature have become policy in the state because they've gone to the ballot. I'm thinking about the minimum wage, repealing the repeal of the minimum wage, the Medicaid expansion, things like that, that would not have passed the legislature. I, though, think there ought to be a pathway for the citizens to have some kind of avenue to express their sentiments. So, I kind of see both sides, but it's all become so politicized at this point.
Would they flip immediately if it were an issue that they were in favor of?
You talking about
the GOP?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do in particular as it relates to abortion is cut off the rest of the ladder to make it harder to fix it. Would they change? I don't know. I mean, in the past, they had this position. John Ashcroft, who used to be the epitome of conservatism, not only in Missouri but across the country, stood firm and said, no, wait, people ought to have access to the ballot. And the reality is a lot of the stuff that's passing, not only passing but passing overwhelmingly, is also being overwhelmingly killed down in Jefferson City by this legislature of Republicans, whether it be a raise in the minimum wage, it doesn't even make it to the ballot, the Medicaid reimbursement, gambling, the legalization of gambling.
Right to work.
Legalization of marijuana. These are all things that the Republicans have. There's no chance for it down in Jefferson City. But boy, when it gets to the ballot, the people not only want it, they're embracing it overwhelmingly.
I would think that whether it's the GOP or it's the Democrat Party, that you would use that as a Rosetta Stone. Well, what do the people think? And if the people think this, maybe we're on the wrong side of this issue.
It could be. It can be a democracy derailed. And how so? Because he who has the money shows up and can buy into this game. You know, the feel good grassroots power causes like we're seeing on abortion, those are once out of every 20 that show up. The rest of them are well financed behind folks who've got real resources,
and there's no money on the other side. Yeah. So what happens is you've got $3 million, you can go collect signatures or whatever. So if I'm the marijuana industry, for example, there's going to be no money spent on the other side of that thing.
Yeah.
So I spend my $3 million, I get the signatures, I spend $6 million in the campaign with no opposition voice, and I win.
And you make billions.
Yeah. Right. And so I mean that's the in realpolitik, that's really what's happening with these constitutional amendments at the state level. They're literally bought and paid for.
The filibuster, is it similar controversy to the in the National Senate?
No. So the filibuster rules do replicate what we have up in Washington, D.C., but they can still have a motion and have in the past used a motion for a previous question. Right. They follow the
US, kill the debate in the state Senate.
Right. They follow the Senate rules, but they can kill it. The last time I remember that was done was for legalization of guns of some type, conceal and carry. Yeah. It's not a regularly used tactic. And by the way, a lot of Republicans want access to the ballot here, and a lot of funding Republicans, folks who have significant money out there that have been financing Republicans.
That was my next question.
Access to the ballot.
Is this the, what are they called? I know they're called the Chaos.
Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, the Freedom Caucus. Is this a Freedom Caucus
fight?
It is,
yes.
Okay. It is, yeah. The other difference in the filibuster in Missouri, so in Washington, if you're going to filibuster, you used to have to talk all night. Mr. Right. Smith goes to Washington.
Yeah.
And now, if you don't have 60 votes, you're done. No debate. Nobody has to hold the floor. It's just the bill's dead. In Missouri, if you're going to filibuster and the majority chooses to keep the floor open, keep the Senate open, then you got to talk through the night and the next night. And the next, and that's what's going on right now.
Yeah. What are they talking about?
They read books.
Whatever they want.
Yeah, they'll inquire.
So this is mainly being led by the Democrats. I don't know that any Republicans have participated in the filibuster yet. From my perspective, it's a good fight for the Democrats to have. The Republicans seem to have no problem, passing some of this wacky stuff. But when it comes to common sense things that people want, potentially to have an opportunity to say they're having this fight. So they shut down the legislature for the rest of the year.
I heard someone today on TIAM call it some kind of candy.
Ballot candy.
There you go. Explain what that is.
A ballot candy would be to get you to vote for something. So we want to make John Hancock king of Missouri.
That's a splendid
idea. And I say to you,
that isn't candy.
You put in there the only Americans would be able to vote for John Hancock to be named king of Missouri. And only this. All stuff that's already a law, but it's to make it sexier so that you wind up not voting on about the real meat of the issue. You get dazzled by some of the sparkles.
Because what you end up voting on when you get to the ballot in August or November, there's a ballot summary, and it's a paragraph, and you read it, and you read what it says. So, for example, what's happening here is there's a provision in this initiative petition reform bill that says non-citizens cannot vote in Missouri. Well, that's already the law. But they're explicitly saying in this thing, so that will then appear on the ballot description that voters read as they go to vote. That's ballot candy.
And it has nothing to do with the core issue.
Right.
Okay, very good.
Diverse opinions, mutual respect. That's the politics you'll find at KMOX. Your connection to St. Louis and the region.
Hey, and welcome to the DGS. I'm Michael Kelly.
John Hancock over here. We are sitting in. The team went out. Tragic circumstance. Andrew Stoltz, the producer of the DGS, his mother passed away suddenly last week, and today's the wake. And so they asked us to come in and fill in while they travel up to Alton.
So I went for my walk first thing this morning.
Yeah.
I am on a quest to find cicadas because, you know, we were promised there were going to be 70 billion of these
They're
things
everywhere.
And they were going to be flying around.
They're
it
flying.
Was going to be dust. It was you were going to have a hard time seeing out your window. It was going to sound like jet engines were in your backyard. Not a single cicada in Forest Park.
Well, you're just not living in the right place, Michael. If you come out to God's country out here, the cicada. And who wouldn't want to be in Chesterfield?
No.
So, but the cicadas are everywhere. They're all over my front porch. They
Can you hear them?
Yes.
And so, what are they doing on your front porch? Are they getting into the yard, to the garage?
No,
are they getting?
They're dead on the front porch, and around.
Or it's just the shells, like the
shells. Whatever. I haven't inspected them.
Why not? Well, who's cleaning it up?
Well, you got a broom.
No, so, but are you doing it or is George Ann?
Well, we haven't broomed any yet. They're just kind of
laying. Well, you need to go out and examine them.
We don't use the front door very often, but I'm sure the Amazon Prime people have run across the cicadas. But my tree in the backyard, there's a hole like around the base of the tree. It looks like the warning track at Busch Stadium. It's just so thick of these cicadas, man. And it's not good.
Isn't that interesting? Like, you have them, but here in the city, I've not seen them at all. And I'm outside walking all the time. I haven't run into a one.
Well, so 12, 17 years ago, whenever that was, you know, they had a meeting. And they said, all right, we're going to go to Hancock's or we're going to go to Kelly's? They decided that the place to be.
A plague would definitely go to your house.
Oh no,
over
it's like the
house.
Book of Exodus out there at my house, and they're loud and they're flying all over the place. There was a dead one on my car this morning.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So you were a bachelor last night. You went out for dinner.
Yeah, you know, kind of like this today, right this moment for the DGS fans. So I went out. I was thinking in the afternoon, what is it that I really crave? And I wanted the onion rings at Dave's World Famous.
Where's that at?
It's right there on Woods Mill, the best hamburgers in town.
Really?
Let me tell you, these hamburgers are amazing. So I went over there, I sat down at the bar, and I said, I'll have the bacon cheeseburger with onion rings.
I know.
And you know what she said?
We're out of onion rings. Well,
they're out of onion rings.
I know.
They were out of onion rings. And so now you got all these people in St. Louis out there driving around wanting an onion ring. They're wanting the DGS.
Mm-hmm.
And they got us.
Yeah.
And I can feel your pain. Because it happened to me just last night.
What kind of burger is Dave's World Famous? Is it a smash burger? Or is
no,
it
it's a
like
hamburger. It's a substantial.
Yeah, but do they do it on a flat iron grill like they do at Steak and Shake?
No,
or is it something they do on a grill?
Yes, it's a grilled burger.
Yeah.
And it's a big burger.
Yeah.
And it covers the bun burger. And then they put the stuff and the things and the other stuff.
It's a thick burger.
It's
one of those you have to tell them what temperature you want to cook.
Yes.
At. See, I've gotten into these smash burgers.
Yeah.
They have them all around town. Max Local Eats is one.
Right.
Jack Nolan's.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of them.
Well, that's a Shake Shack is a smash burger.
I guess, but that's more of a fast food burger. This Max Local.
Have you had a Shake Shack?
I got one right across the street from my house.
You have to rob the bank to buy those things.
No. What are they, like $4?
No. It's ridiculous what they, if they're an advertiser,
yeah,
I
be
apologize.
Careful. No,
but
I think they're like $4 or $5,
right? Let me tell you, they could afford to be an advertiser, what they're getting for those hamburgers out there.
It's good stuff, though.
No, they're good.
But
they're
the smash burger is the one that, like they do at Steak and Shake, where they smash it and then it gets kind of crispy on the edges, etc.
Yeah.
I love those burgers. There used to be a place up in North County. What was it? Chuck-a-Burger?
Chuck-a-Burger, yeah. Still there.
Was that by where you grew up?
No. No.
Did you go to Chuck-a-Burger?
I've been to Chuck-a-Burger. I've been to Wolfie's for the hot dogs.
The hot dog deal?
Yeah, there in whatever that is, Overland or whatever.
Chuck-a-Burger still going?
I think so.
I got to make my way
up there. I could be wrong. I've been wrong. I was wrong in 1983 once, but yeah.
Hey, we're going to talk about the stock market. Have you been paying attention to this meme stock stuff?
Yeah, you got this rabbit head guy out there that's got everybody buying all these stocks, and we're going to find out all about it.
People are getting rich, and it's not us, but we're all going to learn how to.
We're going to talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about, which you don't get very often with Hancock and Kelly, but you're going to get it today. Old rabbit head is out there driving the stock market. We're going to get to the bottom of it, but first, we've got the news next on the DGS on KMOX.